How are we?
Good.
Yeah? It was a good week last week. Easter Sunday, Good Friday. How can it not be good though as we celebrate the guts of what we believe? It's awesome. Friends, Luke chapter 12, we'll actually be looking at the passage from verse 13 right through to verse 34. So I'll be trying to get through all that this morning if we can. How about I pray and then we'll dive in together. Father God, we do want to sit under the sound of your voice in your word. We ask that you'd work by your spirit to illuminate our minds, open our hearts, cause our ears to be able to hear. Would you enable us in faith, by faith, to respond and obey so you get honor and you get glory and we put our trust in you. Amen. This week I bumped into a fella and in my chatting with him, it reminded me of the way a lot of people view Christianity and the church, a lot of people in the community around us. And I think for a lot of people, it's this. When your life's unraveling and things are going bad, pop into church for a bit, get a bit of help, get a bit of advice to help get your life back on track, and then get on with how you want to live and the things you want to get about. And this fella I bumped into was with us in church a few years ago, just for a couple of months with his wife and kids. And it was when they were going through a particularly hard time, particularly his business and everything was unraveling. And usually that's the most catastrophic thing for men, when our work unravels or our business fails. And so he said he was around. And then when things started to pick up again and things got back together, he said that was really helpful. So off I went on my way. Often when I bump into people and they haven't been around at church for a little while, they usually immediately feel like they need to explain why they haven't been around. I have that effect on people. And no doubt you do too, yeah, when you've got friends you haven't seen for a while. Sometimes people will just start explaining immediately. You have that impact on people. Now, it did get me thinking, is that okay to view church like that? Is it okay to view Christianity like that? And on some level it is, because on some level I'm glad that he was helped. I am. And if you're here today and you've been around because there's particular crises going on in your life and you're looking for help, you're looking for advice, I do want to say you're in the right place to come and want to seek out God and hear him speak in a church that opens the Bible is the place to be. But my fear for you is this, is that you would be simply trying to just get help for your particular situation and then head off again and potentially miss the very guts of Christianity. Miss out on the very core thing that you really, really need. Now, many people will view the church like that. And to a certain extent, you can be helped by Jesus' words and get some advice sometimes. There are things that Jesus says, treat others the way you'd like to be treated. You know, there's things you'll get in the scripture that the community around you will say, well, that's great advice for life. And that's the kind of help you need. So it's good that the church are telling people those kind of things. But then sometimes you open the scriptures, and I find this more often than not. You hear Jesus' words, and it seems to be at odds with the kind of advice you would normally get from others in the community. It seems sometimes Jesus seems to disagree with the general advice you'd get about life from the rest of the community. We're looking at a passage here this morning that is just like that. Jesus puts forward a story about a man who is living in a very particular kind of way that the community around him and a community in our day would look at him and think, that's a smart way to live. That's really wise. But Jesus tells the story and says, this is dumb. This is ultimate foolishness. And so Jesus is at complete odds with the wisdom of the world. The story is actually, Jesus tells a story about a man with a retirement plan. Yeah? The kind of retirement plan which, if you went and sat with a financial advisor, they would say, yeah, do this kind of stuff. The man works hard. He stores up wealth for himself with the view that soon there would be a time that would come where he would be able to spend many years taking life easy, eating, drinking, enjoying life. And by and large, our community would say, good, that's a good retirement plan. That's smart, that's wise, live that way. But Jesus looks at it and he says, foolish. And we need to understand why Jesus says foolish. Because, and I'll say it right off the bat, it's not foolish to simply have a retirement plan. I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. But there's a type of retirement plan that is utterly foolish because it's completely inadequate for life. And we need to understand what that is. I think Jesus actually goes so far through this passage to effectively say, get a real retirement plan. Get a proper one, a one with substance. Store up wealth, real wealth, permanent wealth. And he says to go about living out that kind of retirement plan is going to involve some different kind of living. Living like what he mentions here that involves selling your possessions and giving to the poor. Now that's just strange, to sell your possessions and give to the poor and for that to be a retirement plan. So are you ready to look at this one today? Yeah. No, that's the truth, Carlos. Yes. Now, some of you have already been wrestling with this throughout the week, yeah? What's that? Change the channel. That's right. If only you could. You can just turn your hearing aid off, mate. Just do that. Some of you have been looking at this passage throughout the week, and so you've been wrestling with this concept of what does it mean to sell my possessions and give to the poor? Surely it can't mean sell my possessions and give to the poor. It must mean something else. I don't know, how have you gone with it? I've been hearing from a few people who have been wrestling with these concepts. So let's wrestle together this morning and see if we can together be encouraged. The situation that's going on there, pick it up in verse 13 with me. Jesus is teaching and there's a crowd listening, as there often is through Luke. Verse 13, someone interrupts what's happening and there's a request that comes to Jesus. Verse 13, someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." So this is an inheritance dispute. Two brothers, there's some type of dispute that they can't sort out among themselves. And in the first century, the way you would get some kind of adjudication on a dispute like this is you'd take it to a recognized rabbi. That's what you do. So this fellow is just coming to Jesus as a recognized rabbi of the time, and asking Jesus to help out with sorting out the dispute. Jesus is not interested at all in helping this man and getting involved in this kind of dispute. Verse 14, Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" So he's basically refusing to get involved. He's not interested, but he does take the opportunity here to address an issue that he spots in this man's heart. Jesus spots something in this man's attitude towards life, and Jesus takes the opportunity to dive in and address it. He can see that this man is really concerned about his inheritance, about his money, about his possessions, and Jesus wants to direct his concern towards something of far more substance. There's something he should be far more concerned about than simply his inheritance, his possessions. And he warns him about what he sees in his heart. Look at verse 15. Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." So Jesus obviously spots greed in this man's heart. Greed that's actually causing him to act in a way to challenge the inheritance that's being divvied out at the time. Jesus says, what's causing you to come to me and ask this question? Is this greed in your heart? You are wanting for yourself at the expense of others. You're coveting what someone else has, your brother has, because you want it for yourself. That's actually what's going on. Jesus says it's greed. And Jesus says to be on, to watch out and be on guard. It's a very serious thing. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. There's lots of different kinds of greed. You can be greedy for money. You can be greedy for status. You can be greedy for recognition and significance. We can be greedy for many things. Often money is connected with what we're greedy about, though, and it seems to be the big thing for him here. Be careful of greed. It is destructive for you and for those around you. And Jesus is warning this man to actually be on his guard against greed. And in doing that, identify something larger about the man's attitude and about life. And look what he flows on to say. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. That's a huge one that we must let sink deep in our hands. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of your possessions. In other words, life is not about how much stuff you own. It's not. It's just not. And he can see in this man's life, he can see that this man is having a dispute about inheritance, because this man is actually ultimately looking for life, happiness, contentment, satisfaction, fulfillment in possessions. And Jesus is saying, just so you know, that's not what life's about. That's not where you will find life. And Jesus spots this tragedy going on in this man's life. And Jesus spots that same tragedy when it's going on in your life and in my life, when we drift towards thinking that life is about the things that you can possess for yourself. He sees it, even when you don't. But can you see evidence of greed in your own heart? Can you see evidence of running after possessions to get life? Can you identify when you do that yourself? Because I actually think everyone pretty much agrees with this. Yep, greed's bad. And yeah, life doesn't consist in the abundance of your possessions. Even generally, the community around us would say, yeah, that's not what life's about. Life's about people and relationships and family and doing good things and leaving the world a better place. Most people will say, yeah, no, life's not about money and possessions. It's about all those other things. And yet, what you see by and large is people, including us, running after possessions continually. Continually going after them in a way that gives evidence to the fact that we're looking for life in possessions. If you find yourself waking up in the morning and thinking about things that you need, if you find yourself working hard throughout the day with certain possessions in mind, the car, the house, the renovation, the I don't know what it is, that's because there's something in you that's thinking that when you get those things, you'll be able to take a big, deep breath and go, oh, now I'm living, now I'll be satisfied. And often for us, happiness can just be just beyond our reach, and we're fooled. Our own hearts fool us into thinking, if I just get this and that and this and that, then I'll arrive at that place of contentment and happiness, which is effectively to seek life in possessions and go running after possessions to get life. Now, you might be thinking, oh, I don't think I do that. I don't think I run after possessions. Well, do you fast walk after possessions? You know what fast walking is? It's where you're not running. You're basically running. You're just pretending you're walking. Yeah. It's that thing they do in the Olympics, you know, where they just go like that. And I'm not going to do it for you. But they're meant to be walking, but they're moving as fast as a runner. It's just pretend running. You know, and sometimes we can do that even as Christians. We try and make it out as though we're not into stuff. You know, so we're walking, but we're fast walking. We may as well be running like everyone around us to get the stuff that everyone around us is getting for themselves, because deep down in our hearts, it exposes that we do believe that that is where life is found. And Jesus is just saying as clear as he can, just so you know, life is not about possessions you can own. You know, the classic phrase, he who dies with the most toys wins? No? Oh. Maybe it was put out by some toy company, maybe. But boys grow up and they still just want toys and want to collect them. Jesus wants to push into this more so, and he does it by telling a story to really kind of help this bite for us and help us feel it. And look, pick up the parable that he tells there in verse 16. And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. So it's a story about a rich man who gets richer. It's a very simple story. There's a rich man and his ground is producing a good crop, so much so that, look at verse 17, he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. So he's in a bit of a fix, really. He's an incredibly wealthy man. And back in the first century, often wealth would be shown by how many barns you had full of produce, even in an agricultural society. So he obviously had a couple of big barns already, chockers full of produce and crop. Wealthy, wealthy man, but he's got a problem. There's another bumper crop coming his way. There's more wealth coming at him. He doesn't know what to do with it. He can't find an easy solution to store his wealth. And so he's got the kind of problem that we all wish we had, okay? And what does he decide to do? What do I do with all this wealth that's coming at me? Verse 18, he says, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. He basically goes about doing what any financial advisor would tell you what to do with wealth if it's coming your way, is actually hang on to it and put it to work so you get more wealth as time goes on. And so he does that. And he's got to work hard to hang on to his wealth. He's got to actually demolish his existing barns and build new ones. So he's got to spend money to make money. So he's doing all the right things, you know, and he builds bigger barns so that he can fill them with grain and have even more wealth. And today, that kind of activity, that kind of advice is often handed around, and someone who lives that way today would be told that they're securing for themselves a financial future. And it's a good thing to do. But Jesus looks at what this man does and he says, this is foolish. Look at verse 20. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? So God says to him, you're a fool. Why is this man a fool? Because he's going to die that very night. Is that a sign? Should I preach on? He's a fool because he's not even going to live long enough to enjoy the very thing that he's working with all of his strength toward. You know? He's living in a way where all of his efforts, all of his energy, all of his finances is towards saving up for this moment that is to come where he'll finally get to live and enjoy and relax. But that moment's not going to come for him because he's going to die before he even gets there. His life's going to be taken from him. And Jesus says, just at a plain level, that is foolish. To give all of yourself, all of your life towards a moment that you can't even guarantee is going to come. Because the truth of the reality is, you don't control when you go. We wish we could. We all assume that we're going to be around for our retirement. And it's not wrong to plan for it. But to assume it as though it's going to happen without even having a vague concept in your mind that you may not arrive there, Jesus would say, it's foolish to live assuming that that day is coming, because it might not. And for some of us here, it won't. And we need to acknowledge that. Perhaps for all of us here, it won't. Jesus may return very soon. The day may not come. So it's a foolish thing to invest all of yourself for that moment that's coming one day. Just at a ground level, there's foolishness about that. It's to put all your eggs in one basket, but then perhaps find yourself not being able to sit in your basket and eat your eggs. All right? To use an Easter illustration. Don't make this mistake. Don't be foolish like that. Don't invest all of yourself for that moment that may not come. But it's foolish for another reason, an even bigger reason. You pick up that in verse 21. You see, it's not simply foolish to have a retirement plan. Jesus is not saying, just don't even plan for the future. That's not what he's saying. Look what he's saying in verse 21. This is how it will be for anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich towards God. I would suggest that is the key to understanding why Jesus says this is foolish. It's not wrong to store up things to provide for yourself and your family for the future, but to do that whilst neglecting being rich toward God is the most foolish thing you can do. To store up things for yourself but not be rich toward God is the ultimate foolish thing to do. This, in a sense, directs us towards the very endeavor of the Christian life. And it's a beautiful way of describing what the kind of walk that we are attempting together as Christians. It is to be rich toward God in this life. No matter what you do, no matter how much you earn, no matter what you get involved in, no matter whether you get put together a good retirement plan or not, are you living rich toward God? Is that how your life could be described? Rich toward God. I think it's a beautiful way of describing the Christian life. To aim to live rich towards God. What does that mean? What does it mean to be rich towards God? Let's unpack that for a few moments, looking at the passage that flows on from this one and see some details about what it means to be rich towards God. It does include all of your life, no doubt. Broadly speaking, to be rich towards God includes everything you do and say, the way you live, but it must at least include, mustn't it? It must at least include, in being rich toward God, what you do with your finances. Yeah? Just at a very base level, it's got to at least include that, being rich toward God. So let me say like this. Are you being rich toward God? Do you spend your money generously on the things that God is concerned about? Do you spend your money generously on the things God is concerned about? Now, we know how to spend our money generously because you will do it easily on the things you're already concerned about. You'll spend your money generously on the things that you're concerned about. The question is, are the things that you're concerned about the same things that God is concerned about? Because to be rich towards God is to spend your money generously on the things He's concerned about. So do they match? Do the things that you're living for, the things that you're eager and focused on and heading toward, are they the same as what God is about? And I trust that this is partly what will happen for us as we grow up in our faith, that as time goes on and we mature, the things we are concerned about grow closer and closer and closer toward the things that God is most concerned about. And we spend our finances generously on those things. So what is God concerned about? How do we live richly towards Him? What's He concerned about? Broadly speaking, it needs to be acknowledged that God is concerned about you providing for yourself and your family. That's certainly part of it, and that needs to be acknowledged. He is concerned that you survive. He's concerned that there's enough for you to eat and clothes and shelter. God's concerned more broadly than just you and your family. He's concerned about the community around us. He's concerned about community issues. He's concerned about justice in our land. He's concerned about the poor and the needy among us. He is concerned for those things. In fact, He's so concerned about those things that that's actually what He goes on to later in the passage, and we'll get to it in a minute, verse 33, where He says, sell your possessions and give to the poor. He's concerned enough about the poor to tell us to sell our possessions and give toward them. Now, who are the poor around us? Anyone in need. And particularly in Luke's gospel, the poor are not those who are simply materially in need, but a broader category of people who, because of their material need, are just far more willing to admit that they need help in life. And that often translates into a person recognizing that they need help in spiritual life, which is why Jesus would say, blessed are the poor in spirit. And Jesus would say, I've come for the poor. In other words, I've come for those who know they need. They know they are in need, materially and financially, and they know they are in need. They can more easily understand they're in need spiritually. And because of this connection and the way Luke uses the word poor, I want to now talk about what God is most concerned about. Because He is concerned about those things. But what is God most concerned about? What is He ultimately concerned about? He's concerned about people's spiritual condition. He's concerned that people get saved from their sins. He's concerned that people get rescued from hell. And you see God's ultimate concern by looking at what Jesus did when He came. Jesus did many things, But if you ask Jesus, what was the focus of your mission? Why have you really come? Jesus says, I have come to seek and to save the lost. Talking about those who are spiritually lost, those in sin, you and I. God is ultimately concerned to make a way for people to be able to enter his kingdom and belong to his people and come into his church. So the question for us is, if that's what God is ultimately concerned about, are you and am I being richly generous towards that which God is ultimately concerned about? Are you spending your money generously on God's mission to see people saved here in the peninsula and beyond us all around the globe? Is mission the thing that you are driven to spend your finances on? And I am, I need to say on this, this is not coming from a place where I'm feeling you need to be rebuked. We just work through the next passage that comes before us here. So this is what we need to hear today. But I have to say, I am encouraged continually at the generosity of Christians in this church, Peninsula, and the rest of the mob. I'm encouraged at how God seems to continue to mature us and many in a way that causes us to step up and use our finances generously to mimic our God who has been so generous. So much so that we're able to continue to do more and reach more people so people can be saved. I'm encouraged by that. But I could always do with more of a nudge. I could always do with more of a rebuke. And you probably could too. So think into this for a moment. Do you spend your money generously on the thing that God is concerned about? People being saved here on the peninsula. People being saved all around the globe. Or do you give your finances as a bit of an afterthought to those things? Do you give scraps to the things that God is most concerned about? I've been in pastoral ministry now for almost 20 years, which is not that long, a couple of years. And I tell you what, I've had a few bees under my bonnet over that time. And can I give you one of them? Can I go on a bit of a rant? Forgive me. Let me go on a rant. One of the things that I've seen over the years, and I see it in myself too, it's not just everyone else, I see this in myself, is that occasionally I see people will come to the pastors of a church or to the youth pastors and say, look, I've got this old thing. I've got this old telly or this old lounge. Could the church use it? Does the church want it? Now, it's not entirely inappropriate, okay? Especially youth, they trash couches. So sometimes secondhand couches can be good for churches, right? But you see this, and sometimes I've had the courage, because it comes a lot, sometimes I've had the courage to say, oh, you've got an old telly, an old couch. Oh, okay, is there something wrong with it? Oh, no, perfect working order. Oh, okay, so why are you giving it away? Oh, we bought a new one. And then sometimes I've had the courage to say, oh, the new one would be good, thanks. Well, why don't you buy two new ones and give one to the church? Now, it's half having a joke, having a crack, but can you see sometimes what goes on in our minds? We very easily will spend our money generously on new things for ourselves. We don't even need anyone to talk us into doing that. We just do it, and then we're left with our crap, and we go, what do I do with this? I could either put it out the front of my house, or maybe the church needs it, you know? It's like, is God not more deserving, you know, than our scraps? You know, God is worth more than that. And hear me, I'm not saying this, I'm not rebuking you particularly, but I'm just wanting us to think together about sometimes how our minds and our hearts work so that we automatically think about being generous towards ourselves first and foremost, and giving towards God and his mission and his church can be an afterthought where he gets the scraps. How can we let that be? How can we reorientate ourselves so we spend ourselves generously on the work of God? We are rich towards him, starting with our finances. And it's always the most awkward thing to talk about our finances, because here's how I describe it. There's a string, an invisible string that's attached from your wallet to your heart. So whenever we talk about money, ooh, it gets sensitive and it hurts, because where our treasure is, our heart is also, which is what this passage goes on to say. So it is a the way you respond to people talking about money, the things you do with your money will actually show you things about your heart. And we're being called here to have hearts that are rich towards God, lives that are rich towards God. That's going to involve and be reflected in your finances, spending yourself generously. Now, some of us have trouble doing that because we just keep forgetting that God is worth it. Others of us have trouble being generous towards the things God is concerned about, legitimately because we're struggling with our finances. And I don't want to pretend that that is actually the reality for all of us at different times. Yeah, and that may be where you're at right now. You're thinking, "Oh, Tim, for me to be generous towards God's things right now, particularly His ultimate things right now, would mean I would put myself in serious trouble." And you're worried that you won't have enough. And I don't want to pretend that that's not very real. And for some of you, no doubt, that's your worry. That's what's holding you back, a worry that you won't have enough. Jesus knows you're worried, and He addresses our worry. In fact, He anticipates our worry. There's a certain type of worry that's appropriate. There's another type of worry that Jesus says, you got to drop that one. Think about where your worry comes from, what kind of worry it is. And let's look at what Jesus says here in verse 22. Then Jesus said to the disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body and what you will wear. Life is more than food. The body is more than clothes." Just pause there for a minute. Jesus is saying here, don't worry about possessions. Firstly, he says that, he says, because you need to get a bigger vision of life. Life is more than the stuff around you, even the stuff you eat and wear. Life's bigger than that. Secondly, he says, don't worry. He says, because I know what you need and I'm able to look after you, which is not a promise that Christians will never, ever find themselves in poverty. But it's a declaration that God sees everything and is able to care for everything. Look at verse 24. "Consider the ravens." Now, a raven, especially in the first century, is the equivalent of a flying rat. Okay? The scumbags of all the birds. So when he says, "Consider ravens," everyone's like, "Oh, there's disgusting things that fly." All right? Even the ravens. Look how much God cares about even the flying rats of the world. "Consider the ravens, they do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. How much more valuable, and how much more valuable you are than birds." Did I read that right? Yeah, yeah. You're more valuable than ravens. Much more valuable. God cares for you. He knows what you need. He's able to look after you. The third reason why he says don't worry, he goes on to say, look at verse 25, "Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life?" In other words, worrying actually doesn't do anything. It won't help you live any longer. Now, does that mean we're never allowed to think about earning enough money to provide for ourselves and look after ourselves? No, I think there's an appropriate kind of worry. I might not call that worry. I think it's an appropriate concern. It's responsibility for life. It's okay to make legitimate effort to provide for yourself. But the kind of worry Jesus is talking about here, you can actually pick it up in verse 29. Here's the worry Jesus says not to do. Verse 29, "Do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it." Okay, so when he says don't worry, he's saying don't worry, like don't set your heart on these things. Don't focus on them intensely. Don't seek after them in the kind of way that you end up forming an attachment to them as though life depended on them. Don't go after possessions in that way because it's not where life is. It's a terrible thing to put your trust in possessions and those things, because in putting your trust in possessions, you neglect putting your trust in the one who is completely dependable, which is God Himself. There's the problem. We put our trust in things, not in God, which is exactly what verse 30, this is what the pagan world runs after, such things. Those around us who don't trust that God exists or trust that He's good and that He cares for them have nothing to put their trust in but their things. But if you have God and you know he's real and he cares for you and he's trustworthy, you put your trust in him. Don't run like the pagans after things, putting your trust in them. Don't set your heart on them. Do not worry about them. Instead, worry about something worthwhile. If you're going to set your heart on something, if you're going to seek after something, if you're going to focus on something worthwhile. And I think Jesus just kind of redirects our worry. He says, don't worry about possessions. I'll tell you what to worry about. Verse 31, but seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. That's what we're to worry about. That's what we're to seek after. That's what we're to focus on. That's what we're to depend upon, as though life is found there, because it is. Life is found in his kingdom. And so we're to seek his kingdom. And to seek his kingdom is just another way to talk about being rich towards God. If you're going to live richly towards God, you're seeking his kingdom. And we've talked about kingdom a fair bit as we've gone through the Gospel of Luke. To seek his kingdom is to, like the Lord's Prayer directs us, is to pray for the coming of his kingdom. To make sure that you live well as a subject in his kingdom. So let's kind of talk about those things. What does it mean to seek God's kingdom? What does it mean to have your heart set on it and focus on it intensely? I've got three things for you here. To seek God's kingdom, which is to live richly towards God, is to do these things at least. It's to live well as a subject to the king. Yeah, if you're going to seek his kingdom, it starts with you and the way you live. Do you live as a humble subject before your king? And really, kingdom concepts and kingdom languages can be a little foreign to us. But the concept of him and his kingdom and us as being subjects is that he's the sovereign Lord and provider and protector of all things, and we are his humble subjects who are dependent on him and are to live happily before him in obedience to him. In our conduct, in our attitude, we're to live to honour the king. So to seek God's kingdom starts with just the way you live. Do you live well as a subject before your king? Secondly, do you pray that his kingdom would come? Because to live richly towards God, to seek his kingdom, is to pray like he directs us to, which is to pray, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come. And when we ask for his kingdom to come, we're effectively asking that people would be brought under him as king. Lord, would you come? Would you draw near to people? Would you draw them near to you? Would you bring them under you so that your name would be hallowed? Do you seek his kingdom? Do you pray that his kingdom would come? Do you live in a way that actually enables and helps and facilitates people to come under the king? Do you get about his work to build his kingdom? Thirdly, and the third one is just an acknowledgement, I think, about what it means to be rich towards God and the dynamic of what it means to seek the kingdom. I think you just want to acknowledge this. It's going to be costly. To be rich toward God, to seek his kingdom, is going to be costly. And I think sometimes we can make this our endeavor. We can be, I want to go after God. I want to live for him. I want to honor him. I want to go for him. But I want to kind of minimize the cost a little bit. I don't want it to be too heavy on me. And it just doesn't work. You end up slowing down how you run for him. You know, tapering off in how much you seek his kingdom if you're trying to minimize the cost. If you want to seek his kingdom, live richly towards him, it's going to cost us. It's going to cost you. And it's going to cost you in ways that hurt. Look at verse 33. Don't be afraid. Do not be afraid, little flock. For your Father has been pleased to give you his kingdom. I do think one thing that can stop us living like this is worry and fear. And Jesus knows it. He says, don't be afraid. I know this is big. I know this is costly. I know this is a scary way to endeavor to live. But listen. The Father has been pleased to give you his kingdom. He's already given you everything. He's already brought you under his security, his protection, his wealth. So step out. Seek his kingdom. And look at verse 33. Do this. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Now, it's worth just pausing on that one for a little bit. It does mean broader things, but it at least means sell your possessions and give to the poor. So do you do that? When was the last time you sold your stuff? And not just hung on to the money, you know, like that Gumtree ad at the moment where the bloke kind of sells his wife, throws all his stuff up into Gumtree and it comes back down as a big sack of money and he's like, oh, that's cool, got his money. Now, when was the last time you sold your things and actually gave away the money or gave away your things? Because it actually is, if you've done it recently, you'll know how freeing and liberating it is to get rid of things sometimes. Sometimes you will have experienced this maybe when you've moved or you've done a big spring cleanup and you've just kind of got rid of stuff. It sometimes just can be such a liberating thing to remove possessions, to just get them off you. Because even though we run after them and think life can be found in them, once you get them and build them all up, they crush you and they become a weight upon you. And because Jesus knows the very danger that possessions can be, they crush you and you cannot put your trust in them. Jesus will go so far as to say, just sell them. Sell your possessions. Give your money away. It's a good thing to do. So when was the last time you did that? It's been a long time. Go and sell some stuff. You've got too much stuff. We've all got too much stuff. Go and sell it. Now, is this saying Jesus says we should... Is this Jesus saying sell everything and become a holy pauper who lives on the street? No, it's not. Jesus is not saying it's wrong to ever own anything. He's not saying that. Actually, it wouldn't be loving to do that. It wouldn't be loving on the people around you if you were to sell everything you own and then become dependent on them and bludge off them. That's not loving. Jesus never directly rebukes anyone for simply owning things. Jesus and his disciples are often on the receiving end of people who have homes and can welcome them in and be hospitable towards them. Jesus' own disciples would have likely owned things and owned homes. They didn't have to sell everything to follow him. Jesus, when he's hanging on the cross, what does he say to the disciple John? He said, would you take my mum into your home? Would you care for her? So it's not a blanket rule. If you're a Christian, you're not allowed to own anything. Like some would probably take it to that extreme. But it's to do this. Jesus is warning us, in a sense, about the danger of possessions, the power of possessions, and calling us as believers that not to be dominated by possessions, because it can so easily happen that we trust in them, rely on them, find security in them, and Jesus says that is a fatal barrier for life, because they'll kill you as they inhibit your ability to trust in God, the one who is truly trustworthy. Possessions are dangerous. Now, I'm going to wrap up with two bigger things. If you've been catching the weight of what we're being told here this morning, the way we're being called to live, the way we're being commanded to live in order to follow Jesus, you may be sitting there thinking, this is just all a bit much. Do I really have to? Why should I live richly towards God? I like living richly towards myself. It's nice. Why should I live richly towards God? Two things. Number one, he is completely deserving of all of the riches you could send his way. And number two, as you live this way, you're actually working for real riches, permanent riches. Let me unpack those two things. Firstly, to be rich towards God, we're called to do that not because God is in need of any of our stuff. Really, he's not in need of our generosity. He's not lacking in anything in himself. God, just in himself, is so wealthy, it is beyond comprehension for us. He is so completely self-sufficient in his glory and his majesty that he is not in any need of our things. From his wealth and majesty and glory, he is the one who creates all things and makes all things, including you and I and everything we live on. God owns all the cows on the hill. He owns all things. He doesn't need anything from us. It's kind of hilarious when you see things from God's point of view. He owns everything. Now, we're down here chopping up our blocks, putting our names on them, you know, going, well, that's my car. That's my thing. I've got these things I'm working towards. And God's just there going, yeah, go on. Have your fun. I own it all. I can just take it all like that. I can take your life like that. It's all just on loan for a season and for a purpose. which is actually to honor me as your king. That's why you're alive. That's why you've got stuff. I'm the one who richly has poured it out and given it to you, and I've ultimately poured out my riches on you by pouring out mercy and grace toward you in Jesus Christ. As I came in the person of the Son and went to the cross to bear your sin and turn and offer you forgiveness and life eternal, there is where God's riches are poured out in the most ultimate sense towards us. You know, 2 Corinthians 8 verse 9 says like this, "The grace of the Lord Jesus has come to us, where though he was rich, yet for your sake became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich." God's poured out his riches on us in Christ. He's been so generous towards us in Christ that this needs to be said. Anything that you can offer to him, he is completely deserving of it. As much of your attention and time and life and energy and finances as you can offer to him and be rich toward him with will never be too much. He is completely deserving of all of the riches that you can offer him. Secondly and lastly, as you live this way, as you and I attempt by his Spirit to live this way, richly towards him, seeking his kingdom, bearing the cost, know this, that as we do that, we're actually working for real riches. And here's where the real retirement plan thing comes back in. Sure, put in place finances because you might get a few more years while you're here. Yeah, do that. But whatever you do, make sure you put in place the real retirement plan, which is to store up real wealth, permanent wealth, which will never be taken away and will only increase in value. Look at verse 33. "Sell your possessions, give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, when no thief comes near and no moth destroys, for where your treasure is, your heart will be also." We've been called to live in a particular way which actually stores up treasure, wealth that is permanent and can never be taken away, the wealth that we will find in heaven when we step into glory. Now, most of us would like a little bit more detail on what that looks like. What are those treasures in heaven? What would it be like to miss out on them? How does that all work? You know, we're kind of left speculating to a certain extent, speculating from Scripture about what they might be. We don't have time to go into them all right now, but you can imagine what they might be, can't you? I tell you where it all heads towards for me is that the riches that I'll receive in heaven that can never be taken away, which will never diminish in value, which will only ever increase, that I'll get to enjoy and live in, is fundamentally to be with God himself. There is my treasure in heaven of ultimate worth that will never be taken. There is my wealth that I'll step into and be in. There is my ultimate retirement plan, security, stability, satisfaction, contentment, the biggest, deepest, longest breath I've ever taken. That's where life is. Foolish to get stuck on possessions. Wise to work and live in a way that stores up wealth in the future. I'll finish with a quick story. I went to Disneyland last year. Pretty exciting. There we go. Never got to go to Disneyland when I was a kid. Mum and Dad never took me there. So I had to take myself there as a 38-year-old and, you know, pretend to be a kid again. But this funny little thing happened as we were walking in. I was there with a mate of mine, and out the front of Disneyland, before you actually pay for your ticket and walk in, you can see kind of Disneyland over the wall. You can see the tops of the rides and the buildings and things. So beautiful, you know, colourful, lovely. Outside of Disneyland, there's this fountain, pretty good-looking fountain, yeah? Big spurting water and pretty kind of spectacular. And just as I was walking past, I noticed this little kid who was kind of standing in front of the fountain, just looking at it, just going, He was like amazed at how beautiful this fountain was. He was floored by it. He'd never seen anything like it. But his mum and dad and the rest of his family were kind of lining up, getting their tickets, going, you know, come on, little Johnny, whatever his name was. We're going in. And he was just there, kind of stuck on the fountain. And I was just walking past thinking, that's interesting, isn't it? Is this little kid stuck on the fountain? And I remember thinking, wouldn't it be tragic if he never made it in? Wouldn't it be tragic if he got stuck outside staring at the fountain and never actually got into the glory and the goodness of Disneyland, yeah? I'll tell you something far more tragic than that is for us to get stuck on possessions here and never make it into glory because we're so caught up in putting our trust in the things that are here. That's truly tragic. Jesus says that is the epitome of foolishness. Put your trust in Him. Live for that day. Get a real retirement plan. Let me pray. Father God, we're so grateful that you speak in such straight up terms through your Son Jesus, and that you in your richness would come to us in the person of Christ and call us to live richly towards you. You call us to seek your kingdom. You call us to live in a way that's costly and honors you. Would you by your Spirit enable us to live that life? Would you enable us to live in such a way that does store up wealth with you in glory? Would you enable us to take our eyes off possessions and the things we're so tempted to put our trust in, and place them firmly upon you. Focus on you. Live for you. And long for the day we'll be with you face to face, knowing your wealth and riches like we've only caught glimpses of them here. Lord, would you do that work in us for our sake, but ultimately for your name's sake. Amen.